Martin, the last time I saw you, I think, I can't remember the date exactly, but I think it was around about 2000, you came with Jethro Tull to the Brentwood Centre. I'm sure you don't remember, because you do.
Because there's loads of kids walking around in swimming costumes.
That's right, yes.
It's like a whole load of, it's mayhem. It's like being in the middle of a nightmare sports hall. And but a good gig though.
It was a good gig, and what I remember about how much fun the show was, I think we even had bouncing balls going down the audience as well at one stage. But it was a typical Tull gig at that time.
Yes, it was. But those days are now sadly over.
Well, that's what I was going to move on to you because Ian has gone out. He's touring soon, or at the moment you're touring as well. Does that actually mean Tull is split for the moment, or is it just a clash of calendars?
No, it's sort of a long vacation, and I don't see anything on the horizon getting back together again. But I think we've both left that door unlocked as far as Tull might happen again sometime in the future, but it would have to be a very, very special show and very, very fresh and exciting.
So you're saying never say never, though.
Never say never, but the good thing is, Ian's doing the sort of music he wants to do, sort of, more instrumental, and he's sort of doing, the latter-day Jethro Tull, the more modern stuff, and I'm doing classic Tull from the sort of earlier years, more rock orientated stuff, and a bit sort of heavier.
Absolutely. Let me just take you back to those early years. I did read somewhere, you've got to confirm if this is true. My guest last week on this program was a certain gentleman by the name of Steve Howe, and apparently he failed his audition for Jethro Tull. Is that true? You beat him to it.
Yeah, well, the auditions for Jethro Tull had every guitar player in the world. It was not every guitar player, but Mick Taylor was there. Trying to remember who else, but I mean, Tony Iommi. There's a lot of really top guitar players that were after the job. But,
and you got it.
I don't know how, why, but there you go. It went my way, and that was the way it went.
And a very unique sound as well for Jethro Tull. I mean, I think you can listen to six bars of any Jethro Tull record and instantly recognisable as a Jethro Tull record. And it was almost difficult to categorise in early days. I think Rock Writers found it difficult. Didn't know where to put you, did they?
Yeah, well, I guess it's now labelled under prog, which and I've always sort of snickered at the name of progressive music, but I guess it does sort of cover it, because it was sort of bands who were going to stick their neck out and do an about turn and sort of find new ways of recording and new ways of writing material. So I think it comes under that banner.
Talking about writing material, what, did you have any influence in those days? Did you write songs yourselves for Tull, or was it all Ian?
A bit of both. I wrote a small part of the albums, but mainly in the arranging, that there's a huge amount of writing. I mean, I think it's inherent in the job of anybody in Jethro Tull, be they a keyboard player, guitar player, drummer, bass player, that you are writing your own parts around fairly basic songs. So Ian would come to the rehearsal room with a bunch of chords and a top line, and we would then make that into a piece of music, as in Thick as a Brick or Crest of an Ape. So there's a lot of writing that doesn't come under the actual ownership of songwriting, which is a bit of a shame, because it's I think it'd be the same with Steve Howe. You would have to know that he must have, his input into that band was huge.
Absolutely, yeah. He was telling me that last week. Just coming back on, you just mentioned Thick as a Brick, and that was an unusual album. A musically, it was one of your strong points, but just the album cover stood out so much, didn't it? I mean, I can remember as a younger man avidly reading the newspaper cover.
It was a great idea. I mean, that was Ian's idea, but we all sat down and wrote it. And I mean, those are the the days when the vinyl album cover was as almost important as the music.
Of course, yeah.
You know, you spent a lot of time designing it and thinking about what you wanted. I sort of miss those days, you know, that it was a sort of an artistic side of music that sort of played down a bit. You know, a CD cover, obviously, you know, you still want a good cover, but it hasn't got that visual impact, and then you get little pokey booklet, you know, that you put your glasses on to read.
Absolutely, yes, I'm sure you and I do need to put our glasses on. Absolutely. I did one more question on Tull, because I want to talk about you. Were you a sort of a stereotypical rock band of the end of the 60s, early 70s? Did you, you know, tramp around in a battered old van and gigs were hard to come by?
Now, what are we talking about? We definitely did it, but to pin down the years. Before Tull, definitely. Mm-hmm. Sleeping on floors, eating cans of cold baked beans. Sob story, but everybody did it, and I quite like the fact I did that. You know, it sort of made you realise the value of everything. But then with Jethro Tull, it was pretty good from the word go. You know, it was all you know, pretty organised, and then touring got easier and easier, and the whole sort of system, you got more crew, and I mean, it sort of rapidly became quite smart, easy, and yeah, it was all went up.
Did you find it tough on the road, though? Because you did some long tours, you were away from home for a long time. How was that on your family life, etc.?
Well, I didn't get married until the sort of mid 70s, so so the early days were sort of carefree. You know, we just sort of we'd fly to New York and then play all of the states, play Hawaii, play Japan, Australia, New Zealand. We'd be home 3 months later.
Wow.
And you just sort of unlock the door to your bed sit and start it again. It was quite nice. I think you had to be single to do that intensity, and then it got difficult because we still did huge tours all the way through 80s and 90s, and yeah, you know, families suffer. It's a selfish job.
Yeah, it is. Now, about you, what are you up to these days? You're just about to, you played in in Devon the other night. You're off to Brighton next, and then you're playing at London. You're playing in at the Borderline. That should be a good gig.
It's great. I love playing there. Yeah, I've got a brand new band. I've got a new drummer, George Lindsay. I've got a new bass player, Greg Harewood. New singer, Dan Crisp. And then Pat O'May and Frank Mead. From the old lineup, but it's better than ever, and we've got a great set for everybody. We've sort of played it for the first time at Tavistock, and it's just went really, really well.
Good, and you're playing a mixture of Tull stuff and your own stuff, or is it purely just Tull stuff?
Yeah, you know, it's a bit less Tull because, you know, I'm sort of looking at where we're going, and there's Tull stuff in its original form, things like Teacher, Minstrel, Cry You a Song, and then I've got some Tull stuff that I've made my own. We do a version of Fat Man, which is sort of almost heavy metal. It's not heavy metal.
Okay.
It's a rock version, and it's really cool, although I say it myself, but everybody loves it.
So who've you got on vocals for you?
Dan Crisp is a local guy that I've worked with a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there were blues. We do a very sort of quirky version of Crossroads. Just doing stuff that's really fun to play.
And what about writing? Are you writing these days and getting into the studio? Because you've had four solo albums out over the years?
Yeah. Well, the new solo album's out today.
It's out today.
Coincidence. And it's called Away With Words, but it's purely acoustic. There's one song on it, but it's more what I sort of categorise as a classical crossover, because it's very, lots of classical guitars, bouzoukis, mandolins, and very mellow. And it's half the material that I've written and half Jethro Tull songs, but sort of the very melodic, quiet ones.
How tough is it these days for any musician of any age to get their stuff out there? Now we've got new avenues, so many avenues to get music heard, you know, yeah. YouTube and Spotify. Mm-hmm. In the old days, you know, you had a record company and you sold records and you got your royalties, etc. But it must be really tough these days to actually get paid, isn't it?
It's a whole new learning curve, and I'm learning as we speak. But amazingly, I've got a really great record company. They're called RSK, and they're quite a traditional company, you know, as they were in the old days, where, you know, it's all in-house.
Mm-hmm.
They're not huge, but they've got some really strong artists. They've got classical artists as well. But, you know, they're real people who interact with you and actually have a lot of faith and enthusiasm for the product. It's really nice. I like that side of the business where we're actually dealing with human beings, and you know, you're not sort of mm-hmm. dealing with some disembodied voice on the end of an email. So I was quite pleased to find them.
What are you doing? What do you do when you're not in the studio, where you're not playing gigs? What do you like to do? Are you a golfer, a fisherman, or?
Do you want the list? I run.
Right.
I wakeboard in the summer and I windsurf.
Wow.
I like snowboarding. I play table tennis. Big fan of table tennis. I play a bit of tennis. I just love all that.
Well, sounds like you're keeping fit. You're playing at the Borderline on next week, isn't it? I think. Are there still tickets available? Do you know?
There are. Yeah. Let me just. I've got the date right in front of me.
So have I. Someone's just disappeared. I've got it. It's the 4th of October. That's this Thursday,
yeah,
isn't it?
It is. It is indeed. Yeah. I would say it's getting close to a sellout, but I think that I haven't heard that there are no more tickets. So that's
okay.
Good for the listeners.
I'm going to ask you the same question I asked Steve Howe. Tribute bands, Jethro Tull tribute bands. Do you go to see them? What's your opinion of them?
Well, it's a compliment, you know, that they think it's worth trying to make a living on our music. That means, you know, it's quite nice. It's a bit scary because it's like having a doppelganger.
Yes, I'm sure it is, yeah.
And the worrying thing that they might play better than I do. I've worked with a couple for a bit of, you know, sometimes I go over to Italy and... I mean, mainly because I like going over there,
mm-hmm.
and I go and play a couple of songs with this one tribute band, but they're really good players, and I just like them as people. But yeah, there's a place for them, and I mean the market is incredibly strong. I mean, people will go and see Queen tribute bands.
Yeah, and the Floyd. Yeah. There must be 5 Pink Floyd tribute bands, and they're all very, very good.
Yeah, well, they play great, and it says a lot. To people like me, that there's an audience that just want to hear the music played well, and they don't care who's playing it, but that they go to listen, and it's a bit of a sort of a signal to people like us that, you know, if you're not really on the ball with the music and playing it really, really well, then they'll go and listen to somebody else play it.
Absolutely. Martin, all the best with the new album, all the best with the tour, and hopefully, perhaps one day you can come back to the Brentwood Centre and perhaps we can do an interview face-to-face. I wish you all the best. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us, and good luck at the Borderline.
Thank you, Mike. That's a pleasure.